Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is a former Chapel Hill City Council person who is known throughout the North Carolina political community as an active political blogger and driver of political causes. And it turns out, Jim Protzman, should I call you Jim or James? You're the author, James Protzman, and you're my friend, Jim Protzman.
That's right.
Sort of what?
James the author.
James the author. Right? We're going to be James Protzman today. But you've burst onto the literary scene with a new book that has a engaging title called Jesus Swept, and people have been writing about it. One person liberal blogger Jane Protzman, one of the founders of the influential progressive group blog Blue North Carolina, has written a novel called Jesus Wept. The book focuses on the boundary between religion and politics in American life, something that the Chapel Hill resident has often written about in a more sharp-tongued manner on his blog. Well, is your book about politics, or is it about religion? Is it a spoof? Tell us about it. You've been going around talking about your book. What do you tell people when you get to make a talk?
It's all of the above, DG. I describe the book as fun, first of all, first and foremost. It's fun with words. It's fun with sex. It's fun with religion. It's fun with God. A little bit of fun with politics. Of course, being who I am, I couldn't leave politics out completely. And there's a couple of good progressive shots in there. But it's an amalgam for sure. A little bit of everything.
Well, we're describing it in general. What will you tell us specifically about the book?
Specifically, the book is a vehicle for a philosophy that I'm sort of an evangelist about these days. You know, I was raised as a Southern Baptist.
Baptized at 9 years old.
Baptized at nine, went to church. Went to church 5 days a week for the first 17 years of my life. And that's a lot to work through. And this book is part of my working through that. It got started with a bumper sticker. I like to write bumper stickers. I made up a bumper sticker. The words were do good, be nice, have fun. And I shared it with some people. They liked how it sounded. And 10 years later, there was a novel built on that bumper sticker called Jesus Swept. And so I'm working on both fronts. I'm interested in getting people's reactions to my book. And I'm also interested in people considering the idea of doing good, being nice, and having fun.
Where does the title Jesus Wept come from?
In the New Testament, the book of John, chapter 11, verse 35, the shortest book of the Bible, Jesus Wept. And in this book...
We know that, those of us who grew up going to Sunday school and church, because when you had to memorize a Bible verse, we often turned to that particular verse to claim credit, or the whatever it was that we were looking at, an ice cream cone, or whatever it was that we got
right.
From memorizing a Bible verse. That was the trick we played on the teacher.
It was a favorite in Bible school, for sure. So in this book, the mother of one of the characters hears those words on a TV sermon and mishears them, and turns it into a marketing plan for her broom business. She is a broom maker, makes these exotic, sort of weird brooms with twisted handles, and that's where the title of the book comes from.
What about Jesus? Is Jesus a character in your book?
This Jesus business has been sort of the trickiest part of this for me. My family is still Southern Baptist, although I've left the fold. But somewhere along the way, I began to question our view of Jesus. And I'm convinced that Jesus would subscribe to the idea of doing good, being nice, and having fun. But growing up, the having fun part was, if not completely missing, largely missing. Southern Baptists. We didn't dance. We didn't play cards. We didn't go out. We sat around and prayed. And that was, that left something out, in my opinion. And so I'm trying to put that back in. And just personally, fun has never been my strong suit. I'm a serious person, always have been. And this trying to live from the ideas in this book has been really challenging.
Well,
for
it's
me.
Interesting. I want to get back to the. I do want to get back to the book and the characters in the book, and we'll set Jesus aside as a book character for a minute, and go to the motto or bumper sticker is the way you describe it: do good, be nice, have fun. And you have written, well, you've told us just now that you have a hard time having fun. Now, for me, having fun is, that's no commandment. I mean, I'm ready. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that's an easy. That's easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's easy to say, yes, let's have some fun. Let's be happy, have fun. You say, boy, that's good for you, DG, but for me, the commandment to have fun, I have to be told to have fun. I have to be whipped into having fun. Is that
well,
kind of
and I wouldn't go that far. I would say I have to be reminded about it. You know, I've said this a few times. I'm married to a woman who has fun brushing her teeth. So, you know, I wish I had your DNA and her DNA, but I don't. I have, you know, I have my own. And lightheartedness is a tricky proposition. And maybe more important, doing it at the same time that I am doing good and being nice and having fun, all of those together, I think that's a tricky balance. I think lots of people can have fun. Whether or not that fun is contributing to some greater good or doing good, if you will, that's a different question.
Mm. Well, on the other one, now you've written about this and talked about this as well, so I don't feel apologetic about hitting you with this, but you say, I also have trouble being nice.
Right.
Say, I don't have the reputation of being nice. And you even critique yourself looking back. You say, I was a great, well, you didn't, you, these are not your words, but you admit that you rendered great service on the city council here in Chapel Hill, but you did not claim to be nice to everybody.
Yeah. I've had a hard edge for most of my life. And when I look back, even as a blogger, when I look back just 3 years and see some of the things I wrote, I honestly, I can't believe it. I can't believe I wrote it. It's like, who was that person? Because having written this book and having sort of confronted these ideas, I've concluded that nice is better. I mean, duh, maybe everybody already knew that, but I didn't. And so I've actually done something that many people might think of as sort of transformation or a 180 or whatever you want to call it. I every day consciously ask myself many times during the day, where am I on the dimensions of am I doing good, am I being nice, am I having fun? And most of the time the answer is something's missing and I can take that on. Sometimes it's just changing my interpretation of what's already going on. And it's a conversation that's spreading. I'm getting emails and blog posts and lots of stuff from people out in the world. Had a conversation just yesterday about the where we set our thermostats. So it was really cold last week, right? And so the question of where's your thermostat is a do good, be nice, have fun question, because it's really more fun to be warm, right?
For me.
Yeah, for almost anybody. And so my wife and I are in this, she's raising it, I'm lowering it, and you know, so I finally said, well, you know, it's a question about there is some do good possible here in terms of global warming, climate change, all of that business. And so it's kind of like the thermostat. There's this constant adjustment that you can engage in to sort of fine-tune your relationship with that sweet spot where those three ideas overlap.
Well, the do-good part of it is a puzzler for the reasons that you just reviewed with us, but also the question of whether or not doing good is simply the sort of walking around helping little mm-hmm. old ladies across the street and mm-hmm. adjusting your thermostat a degree or two, or mm-hmm. walk, you know, riding your bike for mm-hmm. instead of
all of those things.
You know,
yeah,
you know, these are little cumulative things, but when you start looking somebody in the eye and say, you really, like we believe Jesus did, you know, do good, that means more than just, that means, you know, life-changing, mm-hmm. turning around, kind of finding out big things that need to be done and leaving your life, your current life behind. And so when I saw this in the context of a book titled with Jesus's name mm-hmm. in it, I thought, what is this? Is this little bumper sticker just sort of, do good things, or is it really, hey, back up, take a look at your life, change it, and leave your old life behind, and you know, go do something ultimately good. Are you wrestling with that, or is it just what it just?
I think it's both. I don't wrestle with it very much. My son is a social worker, and he's constantly wondering if what he's doing is making any difference. And you and I would both look at his life and go, of course he's doing good. And yet, you know, he's in the thick of it. He's in the thick of seeing, you know, some of the kids he's working with kill themselves and confronting, you know, am I doing any good? And what should I do instead, if not that? And so I think, I suspect that everybody wonders if what they're doing qualifies. I think most people do qualify. I mean, in my view, most of what people do is inherently good, whether it's the guy, you know, who's helping me figure out how to rearrange my house. You know, the amount of satisfaction that I get from having my house properly arranged is enormous, and it lets me do, you know, there's sort of like this butterfly effect. It lets me do what I need to do instead of worry about that. And so, I don't elevate it to grand things. I actually think that in our, literally every moment of every day, we're either doing good or not. And if we're not, then we can adjust that knob and move that lever, and the next thing you know, we are. I mean, it's that simple.
I'm visiting with James Protzman, former town councilman here in Chapel Hill, and the author of a new book called Jesus Wept. He and I'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is James Protzman. Mr. Protzman is the author of Jesus Wept, and I'm calling you James, and on the top of the book, you are called James Alexander Protzman.
Yeah.
I'm
having a name crisis here. You know, I grew up as a kid named J.A., and then I was Jimmy in high school, and then I was Jim for most of my adult life, and when it came time to publish this book, I had to decide what was going to be on the cover. And I was in the middle of a big transformation in my career, in my civic engagement, in blogging, in writing. So I opted for James, and it still sounds unusual to me, and every time I hear the name James, it reminds me of what I'm up to now.
Looking at yourself as a different person, but in a sense as a transformed person in terms of your public persona and who you are as a writer, as an author of a published book. I'm James Alexander Protzman.
Yeah.
Yeah, and yeah, I can see that. I mean, I've wrestled with,
well,
you know,
have,
I got this
DG. DG.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's...
And nobody knows what that means.
You define yourself that way, and there are always ups and downs of what name you go with.
Well, you know, words as a writer, of course, words matter enormously to me, and you know, the world takes shape through our language, and so calling myself James is different than calling myself Jim, and it sounds different, it means something different, and it's about where I'm going instead of where I've been.
But your friends are always going to call you. You can't. Your old friends are going to call
Most
you.
Most of Maybe. Them still do. Some of them still call me J.A.
J.A.
I love
my
it.
My wife refuses to do. Her name is Jane, and she will not go to James no matter what. It's just like.
Now, what does she call you?
James. She calls me Jim.
She calls you Jim.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's. All right, it's okay now. James, let's talk about this book. And let's let me kind of set it up for you.
Great.
Because you're not going there easily, so I'm going to have to. motto or the bumper sticker that you talked about, that we talked about a lot a few minutes ago, is "Do good, be nice, and have fun." And what is that? How do you get that into the book?
Okay. So there's this guy. His name is Gary, and he is from South Carolina. Conway, South Carolina. And one Memorial Day, he is out with his metal detector on the beach at Myrtle Beach, and he hears this buzzing, crackling noise, and he starts digging, and he finds this silver bracelet that has writing on it that is 1,000 years old. And the writing on it's written in Aramaic. And the writing on this bracelet says, "Good works do, kind and caring be, joy and pleasure take. These are the threads of life fully filled." Well, later in the book, this advertising guy translates that into, "Do good, be nice, have fun. These are the threads of life fully filled." But once the guy finds the bracelet, he actually, that evening while he's shining the bracelet, it's a little bit of an Aladdin's lamp kind of thing. He turns into Jesus that evening. It's also very similar to Joseph Smith and the golden tablets, where he finds these golden tablets. He's transformed into a prophet, and then the tablets disappear, and the prophet lives on. And there's a whole church, founded on the Church
so
of the Latter-day
Saints.
So
this guy named Gary has found it, and he rubs it, and he. In his own mind, at least.
In his own mind.
He is transformed into Jesus.
Into Jesus. And he's a sweeper. His job is a sweeper. He uses the brooms that his mother had made. And he's going up and down the North Carolina coast from South Carolina, sweeping for money. He'll sweep your parking lot for $10, and he's got a couple of disciples. And those three guys are three of the main characters in the book. And how they lose the bracelet, it gets found by somebody
else.
How
do they lose it? How does
they're out? They're Gary is.
This is all early in the book. So
early,
we're not,
yeah, it's
we're
way
not,
early in the book. There, it's in the first chapter, I think. They're out. They do this game called Walk on Water, where Gary is standing on Luke's shoulders. They're out in the surf. They tumble over. The bracelet falls off, and it gets washed up a week later, and someone else finds it.
Well, this is one component to the story. Then is Jesus and mm-hmm. his buddies, who are his disciples, Mark and Luke,
right?
At least to start with,
right.
That's the composition of the group, and they are both sweepers, and they're religious. I call them meddlers.
Meddlers.
They go around meddling in people's
perfect.
Religious
they
life
do.
And getting in trouble,
they
and
do.
And also. Well, at some point in the book, they learn about that the bracelet has been found, and they want it back, and that mm-hmm. creates more complications.
Right.
Now, if you will, and I'm not going to. I mean, it's your book.
Sure.
So, but the people in Chapel Hill may identify more
mm-hmm.
with the character who next finds
right.
and takes possession of the...
The next finder is a woman named Liz. Yeah,
yeah, and tell us, Liz, identify with, I know Liz,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, I think you do know Liz. She works at Duke. I'm just kidding.
But what is Liz's... tell us about Liz and how she...
So Liz is married to a guy named Frank, and they live in Chapel Hill. He is a... retired business school professor, and she is the director of planned giving at Duke's fundraising office.
She is she's a fundraiser.
She's a
and
fundraiser.
She's one of the wonderful people who make contact with donors and help them stay in touch with the school, and then at the right time make arrangements for a large gift.
Right. Her specialty is getting, I think she describes it as getting people at the cusp of dying to give their money to a school that already has plenty.
Now, just be honest with me. Is this person, or is she modeled on a Duke fundraiser? You don't know them, but you do know a lot of fundraisers. You know the fundraisers in Chapel Hill, so she's really modeled on one of these wonderful people in Chapel Hill.
She is an amalgam of lots of different wonderful women who make lots of fundraising work possible. And she's I love Liz.
Well, I kind of like Liz a lot myself now. But now Liz works for another one of these wonderful fundraisers. I believe her name was Rachel, is that right?
Rachel.
Now,
yeah.
Rachel is the boss, or are they colleagues?
She's the boss,
Rachel is
the boss.
Now, you took great liberties with Rachel, didn't you?
I did. That was just for fun.
Well, now, all right, if it's just for fun, and it's not an integral part of the book, but it is for fun, tease us with telling us about Rachel. And then we're going to get back to Liz.
Rachel, she's an interesting woman. She's having an affair with a Baptist preacher who they both love new Jaguars. So that's something they have in common. She loves to shop, and she doesn't take crap off of anybody. She's really her own woman and is great at her job.
Well, you won't tell this, but I will, and that is that the Baptist minister, who is a very serious and committed Christian, and this, but what would you say he would be the minister at a, not at the high-level Episcopal or Methodist church, but a Baptist church where they really do talk about being saved, and it's maybe more blue collar type of.
Yeah, I think his church is in Rougemont, actually,
and country, and and he's a real believer. But he also, they both like sex with each other, so they have a lot of sex with each other.
They have a lot of sex with each other.
And the horrible thing about it is that this guy has lost his teeth, and so he has to take his teeth out to make love properly.
Yes.
I mean, now where did you, I mean, this is just for
you
fun.
Know,
is this,
I don't
or
know
is this
where
an
that
integral
came.
Part? I mean, I loved it. It was just.
I don't know where any of that stuff came from. It just, you know, I've said that writing fiction is like being God. You can just invent the world.
But you do. But.
Go ahead.
All right. Now this is maybe. I mean, I'm starting to meddle a little bit now in criticism. And so you know this is friendly because I love this story, this vignette. But I kept thinking, James, why is this in here? Why are these people in here? Or have you just let loose and said, I'm telling a story. I'm God. I can tell this any way I want to. And this has a little bit to do. Or was this an integral? Were these characters integral to your?
The ones we're talking about right now are peripheral. There's a lot of fun sex in this book. There's no question about that. It's not generally graphic or mean-spirited. It's fun. I think it's really fun. And so that is actually part of the have fun, part of do good, be nice, have fun, as I think about it right now. So, There's a lot of fun sex in here, and I'm not sure if it's an R-rated book or not, but it's close.
Well, when they make the movie of it, I'm not sure what they'll be able to do with it unless they leave some scenes out. But on this one, now let me just, this is another thing that I friendly accuse you of, and that is that you take the Baptist minister, and you talked about your experiences growing up, and maybe not this character would be based on some of the preachers you knew, but you make him probably a Southern or Baptist minister, and then you give him this love of Jaguars and this love of extracurricular sex in a way that compromises his and the people that he represents' ability to really be truly sincere in their religion, or maybe he's sincere, but he just has these human qualities. But nevertheless, it's not the kind of Jesus figure that you would want your minister to be.
Well, you know, I think that.
So I'm sorry, I hadn't really finished with the accusation, which is that. So I guess I'm kind of accusing you of taking a pot shot at your old religion from the standpoint of your current beliefs.
Yeah, my old religion didn't have anybody like Joe Peters in it. The ministers that I the ones that brought me to Jesus were wonderful people. And while I didn't enjoy going to church five times a week, I didn't have what I would call sort of a backlash against that. This is the part of the book that if there's a political thread, this is it. And that is, in modern day, in our life today, the intrusion of religious sensibilities on political policy is something that I object to in the extreme. Whether it's the abortion debate, the contraception debate, the faith-based initiatives, you name it, the integration of church and state, I think, is both dangerous in a political sense, but also just sort of maddening in a hypocrisy sense.
Yeah.
And so I wanted Joe to epitomize that sort of, you know, human being doing whatever he wants for his own satisfaction, and at the same time creating havoc in the world, whether purposeful or not.
Right. All right. I've got to take a break.
Okay.
And then, I hate
Great.
To interrupt at this point. But I'm visiting with James Protzman, who's the our Chapel Hill neighbor, who's the author of Jesus Swept, a new novel, and his first. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Our friend Jim Protzman, the former city councilman, now as James Alexander Protzman, is the author of Jesus Swept, a new novel, really an exciting new novel, and one which is, James Protzman, it's not, I mean, this is a compliment, or this is a positive. It's not a normal novel.
It's
didn't
not.
Mean it.
I didn't want it to be normal. It's not normal. Somebody asked me the other day, he said, are other people having this reaction? I felt like I got hit by something, but I'm not sure what. And I just took that as an enormous compliment. There's so many novels. I was really interested in something out of the ordinary. And like it or not, this is out of the ordinary.
Well, we've talked a little bit about some of the interesting story, some side story, some integral, and we'll get back to talking about a few more things in the novel, I hope, if we have time. But you seem to have multiple objectives. One was to follow the mantra of the book, which is do good, be nice, have fun, your three commandments, I guess, and to promulgate that as a way of living or as a way to guide living. In that sense, it seemed to be a book which is more than fiction, but a book to drag us along into your kind of way of thinking about things. The other is that there's so much fun stuff going on that it seemed to be just simply, in one respect, entertainment. You know, read it for fun if you don't want to read it for any other reason. Just have fun with it. And the other thing is that I... Now, this is the question... is there an important story that you were trying to tell? Or is it simply a collection of things that are strung together with a plot which may not be directional?
Yeah. I think there's a story in here. One of the woman Liz, the fundraiser, connects with another woman who we haven't talked about, and sort of discovers the daughter she never had. And in our searches for meaning in our life, I think that that's at the core. I think that those personal relationships, those parent-child relationships, are paramount. And the story in this book, if I do say so myself, is heartbreaking. So I wanted to tell that story, but mostly I wanted to have fun.
Well, you brought up I follow you on this, and I agree with you that Liz, whom we've gotten to know as the fundraiser, you said you love this character. You made me kind of love her too. She's big. You know, she's as tall as I am, and she's got feet almost as big as mine, and she's but clearly attractive, and a big attractive woman,
a big, strong, good powerful
to me.
Woman.
Yeah, yep. Sounds good to me. And then you mentioned that she is the one who finds the bracelet, the sort of the magic bracelet, the magic jug in which Aladdin lives, that has magic powers and has a magic message on it. And she almost loses, very early in the book, she almost loses this this bracelet to the woman who ultimately comes in contact. But at the moment, at that moment, you would never think they would ever, that there would ever be anything but enemies.
Right.
And I've heard you early on, you're willing to talk about this early event. And would you tell us about what happened when Liz almost lost her bracelet?
Well, when she finds the bracelet on the beach, she has a sort of out-of-body experience which looks like fainting. She falls over on the beach. This pair of twins, a sister-brother combination named Hook and Sinker, they rush down and save her.
These are really rough beach,
low-country swamp
kids.
Yeah, that's right. They grew up on the beach. Hook is covered with tattoos and pierced everything, and Sinker is just a creep. And they find Liz and save her from getting washed away in the surf. They find the bracelet and almost get away with it, but Liz gets it back, and they reconnect. That's in the second chapter of the book. They don't connect again for almost the end.
Until the close to the end, and then they connect. As you, maybe we won't destroy that part of the book, but they connect in a poignant way at the end of the book. So maybe enough about the book, but help me with this. I'm going to describe it, and then I want you to correct and supplement it. But you wind up with three important sort of groups of people who make their way through the book, sometimes intersecting with each other. And one are the Hook and Sinker, these little
twin
beach bums who are very tough-minded and yet in some respects worthless but tough to deal with. And then you have Jesus, that is Gary.
Mm-hmm.
Gary, who becomes Jesus and his disciples, and the rotating Jesus. But these three guys who are the sweepers and the collection of guys who they come in contact with. And then you have Liz and her husband and friends and sister and brothers and family.
Here in Chapel Hill, yeah.
And I view those are the sort of three kind of things that groups of people who bang up against each other, having their adventures, their troubles, and their wrestling with the meaning of life and all of this, and all in the context of this traveling bracelet that passes. Now, have I got it?
That's right. I think at a meta level, those three sets are three other, they're three threads as well, and they weave together in the book and come together, and each of them on their own are either explicitly or just in their daily lives trying to figure out who to be, what is the meaning of life, you know, all of those questions that we all come up against every day, and slogging through it.
Well, you mentioned how these three groups are threaded together, and there's a threading theme of this book, through this book. Now, talk to us about that.
Well, I think threads is a fascinating word. If you do any time blogging, a discussion on a blog is called a thread. So it's actually a sequence of conversations called a thread. And then I put threads on the bracelet, the threads of life fully filled, and then there's these threads of characters. And, you know, I think life is like that. I think things surprisingly intertwine with one another in ways that we would never know about or predict unless we're awake. And then we notice it and we go, oh my goodness, wow, that's connected. And so there's a lot of very weird connections in this book. A number of people have said they've had to read it a couple of times to really get that second layer. It is a tightly written book. When I read fiction, when I come to big passages of description, I skip them. If you skip anything in this book, you will miss something you needed to know. And so that's why it's sort of an interesting challenge for me as a reader and a writer to try to come to grips with, you know, what if they skip this? What if a reader
there's no, I can't wait for the Reader's Digest version.
Right. There isn't one, right?
We need to, speaking of cutting things down, we need to take a break. James Protzman is the author of Jesus Wept. He and I'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. James Protzman, you might know him as Jim Protzman, former town councilman in Chapel Hill, and in my community, a very important person as a political blogger who drives, tweaks, brings about new thoughts in the political matters. And now James Protzman is the author of Jesus Wept. It's a brand new novel, and he's been good enough to come and talk to us about it. And thanks for sharing as much as you did about the characters of the book and some of the plot. I'd like to talk to you about writing the book and how you integrated writing as a part of your life and how you got to that, whether or not you put any of yourself into any of the characters in the book, that kind of thing.
What
will you tell us?
A little bit into all of them, I'm afraid. You know, it was probably about 7 years ago when, at a cocktail party, for the first time ever, when someone said, "What do you do?" The first time ever I answered that with, "I'm a writer." And up until then, I was an advertising guy, a PR guy.
You were writing.
Yes.
You're making money writing in the way that fiction writers almost never do.
Right, right.
But you didn't consider yourself to be a writer. What did you think you were?
I was an ad guy or a PR guy, or, you know, I was writing for hire.
But you didn't really mean that you were. I mean, you were a writer. Didn't
I was
you?
A writer.
But did you describe you were able to say, "I'm a writer" in minute? Is that what you
mean? Yeah, I meant it, and now I'm an author.
But now you don't look down at what you do.
No,
I
still do it.
Yeah,
I mean,
that is
not at all.
Maybe some authors do, but you know that is a tough craft. That's important work.
It transformed my I do three kinds of writing. I write for hire, for businesses. I'm a blogger, and I write fiction. And those three all feed each other in a way that I would have never predicted. My business writing has gotten better because of fiction. My fiction has gotten tighter because of business. I'm not sure exactly what blogging has added to the mix other than the ability to sort of write on command, you know, 100 times a day. But yeah, they're all connected. And I love writing. I'm at the keyboard 16 hours a day. That's what I do. It's who I am.
And so, I'm just trying to put words in your mouth all the time, but you're writing and you're having fun all the time, even when you're getting paid.
Yes.
Right.
How cool is that?
Yeah. Maybe even more fun is the blogging, for which there is no compensation, I don't think.
Never will be.
As a fiction writer, whatever financial reward there will be, likely. I mean, maybe you'll hit a home run. Maybe you will, and we'll have to.
Well, I hope I do. You know, I'm giving all of the author's profits from this book to nonprofits. The Unitarian Church gets half, and independent bookstores get the other.
So now I just got to interrupt this whole thing because I meet a wonderful author like you who struggled to get his first book out, and when he did, he said a prayer and said, "If this book is published, I'll give all my profits to the church." Well, six figures and more, and so he gave it all to the church.
That would be great.
And so, yeah, but nevertheless, the likelihood, it looked, you know, this is a great book, but you're probably still going to make more money writing for hire than you are. So I'm just saying you're writing either for fun or because you're compelled to do so, maybe.
Yeah, both. I love to write.
Well, it would be fun to explore that in more depth, but if we do that, we'll have to come back and do it again because I've just made you talk about so many things that we've run out of time. And what have I missed in a minute? What
You've covered things I didn't know could be covered on the radio. So, no, this is great. This is, I think, you know, I asked myself in the middle of this, you know, are we doing good, being nice, and having fun? And I got three check marks in my brain, and I was like, doesn't get any better than that. So thank you.
I was sure having fun, and you were sure being nice, and I hope we were doing
Hopefully we were doing some good.
James Protzman, my guest, is the author of Jesus Wept. It's a brand new novel, and it's available in all the local bookstores, and on the, you can order it also if you want to through the online stores. And we're proud to know you, James Protzman. Thanks for giving
up
so much time for us. And thanks to all y'all for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.